You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
So, we're currently on stage three, load shedding until tomorrow. Eskom management currently briefing the media. I see the CEO, Andre de Reiter, giving a status update on the Tutuga Power Station that currently has two units online. Eskom says, like they always say, this is due to the loss of generating capacity, which is due to the breakdowns at power stations. All of us are being affected and frustrated by load shedding. I don't need to tell you about the impact this has on our economy. We've had discussions about how big a risk Eskom is to this economy. Just stage two load shedding on its own costs the economy nearly 500 million rand a day. And then it jumps to around 970 million rand for stage four. And that's according to Eskom's Nova Economic Study. And the only urgent solution to the constrained power supply is to bring new capacity to the grid as soon as possible. Load shedding will remain a risk until new capacity of about 4,000 to 6,000 megawatt is brought to the grid. We cannot afford any further delays. So what's government saying, right? What's causing these delays? You know, Eskom seems to be pointing the finger at government, and then you've got government through the Minister of Energy who seems to be blaming Eskom. So I want us to look at the interventions that have been made by government and what the projected timelines are. We'll bring in Thomas Garner, who's the chairman of the South African Independent Power Producers Association, in a short while. But I want us to start this discussion with Rudy Dix, who is the head of project management in the presidency. Rudy, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Morning, Clement. Thanks for inviting me along.
So Eskom's management has been calling on government to bring in this new additional capacity on the grid as urgently as possible. But it appears government procurement is facing delays. What's the holdup?
Well, I think the point that you make firstly is quite important, Clement, that we need to try and get new capacity as quickly as possible on the grid. That's what we're trying to look at. Some of the reforms, as you would have seen, the announcement through the Operation Vulindlela intervention was to try and ensure that we get financial close as quickly as possible at bid window 5 for the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program, and to get bid window 6 issued as quickly as possible. The main thing that we think could assist in shortening the time and to get megawatts onto the grid as quickly as possible is through the embedded generation process, or what will be referred to as self-generation. And this would be, the regulatory change we made last year of lifting the cap for self-generation projects up to a maximum of 100 megawatts. And this would require simple registration process. So not a licensing application, because a licensing application generally takes quite a bit of time, but through a registration process, you could allow quick as possible megawatts onto the grid. Now, in this instance, what you want to do is sound generation allows large businesses, and this in particular, this is mines and energy-intensive users to get off the grid and produce their own generation capacity, and then, of course, allow for a bit of leeway on the grid, for example, so that you could reduce the amount of megawatts.
Okay, and we'll talk more about that self-generation, because Eskom has been opposing some of the plans for these independent power producers to even extend and supply entire areas or sections of suburbs with their independent power, and then they get off the grid. But I'll ask you about that later. You've spoken about financial close for bid window 5. We've seen postponements to the financial close of this fifth bid window renewable energy projects. The original date, if I'm not mistaken, was end of April, but last month, the IPP office extended the deadline to the end of July for the 14 projects and the end of September for the remaining 11. So most of these independent power producers are clearly not ready for financial close. What is the problem? And could part of the problem be the lack of resolution on local content rules?
It is certainly that, Kevin, and let's be frank and honest. I think there are some concerns around the local content issues, and that we need to resolve that. I think that What we're trying to do is, in actual fact, try to find as quick as possible resolution. You have seen in the media, of course, and that's quite correct, that there are some concerns around whether there is sufficient capacity locally to produce the designated components for the bid window 5 RIP components that are going to be required for the build, right?
Yeah.
We have agreed that we're going to have an urgent conversation together with the IPP office, DMRE, and DTIC to try and resolve it as quickly as possible. The longer we delay financial closure, the longer it means that construction will happen, the first shovel will be done, and then, of course, construction to take place. The longer we take on that, the longer it is that these programs will not be built. So we have to resolve it internally ASAP, Clement.
But I suppose, from what you have gathered so far, what seems to be the problem? How flexible is the overall localization policy? Is it flexible enough to adapt? Because given how urgent this additional capacity is needed, there are some people that have suggested that maybe the IPPs should be allowed to go ahead, even if they can only source less than the required 40% content locally. I think that's what Busisiwe Mavuso, one of the board members at Eskom, suggested recently in an opinion piece.
No. You have to remember, this is a procurement process, right? So you issue an RFP for a competitive process, right? Everybody that went into bid window 5 that submitted on the basis of what their cost estimate would be, which inclusive of the localization requirements in that bid, that RFP, right? Now, you all competed. And then, of course, what had happened was that a number of bidders won. And they won on the basis of also inclusive of the local content requirements, and their price was X, right? Now, you suddenly take away that. Would it not be unfair for those who had bid it and their prices were higher because they actually factored in the local content as slightly higher? Would that not be unfair?
Mm.
And I think these are the kind of intricacies that you need to think through, because I would be very unhappy if I bid, and, I kind of like said, well, in actual fact, the local content, if I should add it in, my price would be 50 cents per kilowatt hour, right? And I don't think others would bid for 42 cents a kilowatt hour greatly reflects the local content price.
Mm.
So I do think there's a bit of a complication here because it's a competitively bid process. And, people would have to put in a price and they determine on that particular price. And now later on you say, oh, sorry, I put in a price. I can't actually meet that price because I can't do it on the local content requirements. I think many players would be very unhappy if you suddenly exclude the local content because they priced it on the basis of local content and they can't meet it, so they're going to request for exemption. I do think it does have to have a conversation because, Clement, the point that you make, and all of us make, is that we need to get megawatts onto the grid as quickly as possible. How do we go through that and ensure that we do it as quickly as possible, right? And that's the main thing. How do we resolve it? But I think it's not as simple as Boosie suggests, It's not as simple as that. I don't think it is.
Yeah. So what interventions have you made as the head of project management in the presidency? And what are the projects, when are the projects expected to come online? Because the fifth and sixth bid window programs are expected to provide around 2,600 megawatt each. With these delays, where and how and when do you project that they will come on the grid?
So our focus is also on, unlocking those megawatts, but we think the most immediate and urgent intervention and the quickest is through the embedded generation, south generation projects. Now, you would have known that, last week when we announced there's an estimated 4-5 gigawatts of electricity through the embedded generation projects. And we estimate is about 58 projects, right, that would come online. Now, these are not necessarily procurement linked. They're not, these are private sector interventions and investment decisions, so they're not linked to a public procurement process like the bid windows, for example. And what we require is to unlock and ensure that we unlock that latent demand ASAP. And they have raised a number of concerns with us. For example, they think that the environmental impact assessment regulations are slightly onerous, particularly around the number of days. So we are working with them to try and reduce that number of days from 107 days to 57 days by designating all embedded generation projects as SIPs projects, strategic infrastructure projects, and that would allow it to be reduced. There are also delays that we're working with on NERSA in relation to the regulation process, where there's been some requests from NERSA on requirements that we think are not necessarily necessary.
Yeah.
Partly so because this is a private arrangement, you know, so it's the builder of the project supplying energy to an end user customer or end user customers, right? Which is a mine or a huge plant or whatever. And this is important because that's a private arrangement, and whatever they do is their arrangement. You know?
Yeah.
The third area that has been of concern to us is the capacity at Eskom to process these applications. So this is the grid connection unit, or the unit that works for transmissions, for example. And they don't necessarily have the capacity. We have met with Eskom colleagues, and they've agreed to increase the capacity to ensure and shorten the time span for what is referred to as cost estimate letters and budget quotes. And these are processes that are required before an actual connection can happen. And then there are a few other areas also related to water use license, for instance, and land use policies that we're working on. Now, we have actually set up a team, an intervention team, Clement, between all the relevant departments that are regulators and industry to work through the project challenges on a case by case. So we are resolving this as we speak. And weekly we do this with the industry and with the relevant departments to unlock this.
Yeah.
So 4.5 gigawatts of energy is the quickest that we can unlock right now. It's the quickest that we can deal with in terms of reducing the regulatory challenges. And we think that the private sector, who has already taken decisions to invest on this, is going to be able to do this as quickly as possible. We're looking at 12 months and 2 years to be able to ensure that these projects do come on stream as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
That, I think, is our major, major focus right now.
Yeah, and you need that, right? Because you need even like the private sector municipalities to start reducing their dependency on Eskom. But Eskom itself, Rudy, seems to be blocking some of these private power generation plans. I think a section of Limbro Park, it's a suburb near Sandton, they want to ditch Eskom and get electricity from a private power producer instead. That's Greenstone Energy, which has asked the energy regulator to allow it to supply the area with electricity using gas-powered plants. But Eskom argues that this is a licensed area of supply for us, and that NERSA's rules dictate two distributors cannot operate within the same area. So if you have these frustrations and Eskom also blocking some of these moves, we're not going to get that far.
Clement, but it's important to understand that you don't want to create chaos on the system, because this electricity, this is not just simply any other form of business, right? I mean, there's high risks of of the chaos happening. So you need to manage it in a manner that is quite important, and that's why you have these rules and regulations in place. So you have to have a license and application. In that particular community wants to produce, they also have to get into an agreement with Eskom on wheeling, because you're going to have to use the distribution, in this case, or in the instance of transmission network of Eskom.
Yeah.
Now, how do you manage that? And I think this is quite important. I think that all of us are trying to develop specific set of interventions to ensure that we ease the load of load shedding. We have to manage, unfortunately, in this instance, because it is electricity, it is dangerous.
Mm.
It's not simply just something that you can go out and do and replace, like bread or anything else. Sorry for the bad analogy. But I think that it's quite critical that we need to, it has to be organized and managed in a way that we try and get on as quickly as possible.
Okay, I want to bring in Thomas Garner now, who's the chairman of the South African Independent Power Producers Association. Thomas, you've been listening to what Rudy is saying. What is the frustration that IPPs are facing? According to your assessment, what's causing these delays to Eskom receiving this new additional capacity that we need so urgently?
Clemens, thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Go ahead.
Great, and good morning to you and also to Rudy. Rudy is doing amazing work in the presidency to support us. Clemens, yeah, I think what we need to say is to build a power station, whether it's privately owned or whether it's owned by Eskom or a municipality, is a long-term thing. You don't build a power station overnight. So there's been a lot of work done by a lot of IPPs, a lot of different IPPs in different areas, and there are projects that are ready to be built. However, once you registered your project then at NERSA, and there's a lot of things that you need to comply to before you can register. And when you get your registration, you need to go into financial close, meaning you get all the parties that's funding around the table, all the agreements must be in place, must be signed. That process in itself is probably a 4 to 6 months process. Mm. And then you can go into construction, and if you build a, let's say, a 100 megawatt solar plant, it's going to take you 12 months. And if you build a 100 megawatt wind plant, it's probably going to take you 18 months. So it's a long-term game. Mm-hmm. And it's not something you can do overnight. So what has happened in recent years, as far back as from 2010, is there were mixed messages from government. So firstly, they set up the IPP office in 2011. I think the first RFP came out in May 2011, and a well-known renewable energy IPP program was launched, and that created a new market and new businesses. But then the state capture years came from 2014, 2015 onwards. And by the way, that the President Zuma at the time, when he came to power, split the mineral resources and energy departments in two separate departments, and Minister De Pio Peters took over energy and did a splendid job, very, very good job in getting IPPs into the grid. However, during the later Zuma years, 2014 onwards, when Mr. Brian Molefe, Mr. Koko was at Eskom, they prevented IPPs to come online. And the mixed messages that were sent became problematic. Because capital flow comes with certainty. And there's no certainty in policy and regulatory environment. And then I think with all the good things that President Ramaphosa did, a fatal flaw of one of his appointments was to combine mineral resources and energy again and give it to Minister Mantashe. And Minister Mantashe is a fierce opponent of renewable energy. He's a fierce opponent of the private sector. He's a centralist and a communist, and he doesn't want the private sector to actually participate. So we again have mixed messages. So you will hear one story from the presidency, and you will hear another story from minerals, resources, and energy. And I can go into examples of
that. Yeah. I mean, one of the things he's been saying is that as the Minister of Energy, is him blame then Eskom for the delays? He says they're the ones that are delaying on taking power from emergency projects. So he seems to be suggesting that capacity has been released to Eskom. And the Eskom CEO recently said, we can't really sign emergency power agreements that we haven't seen. So he said Eskom hasn't even received documentation on emergency power agreements, and they need all the facts on the table before signing off. Where do you think the frustration is coming from IPPs to Eskom? Because Eskom at some point complained that IPPs do not provide sufficient information for their engineers to complete their designs as quickly as the IPP would expect. So they say they're not trying to frustrate the process or even delay it. It's just that the IPPs sometimes are not just helping in delaying providing them with the relevant information.
So, Clemens, Minister Mantashe, if he says Eskom is delaying, I think it's a a broad statement, and it's probably not true. And if you look at what happened in, I think it was November 2019, the cabinet actually approved the Integrated Resource Plan 2019. We're now in middle 2022, so that's two and a half years later, and not one megawatt has been procured. So there was a delay from the Mineral Resources and Energy Department from November 2019 until they came out with the first procurement process, which was the RMIPPP, or the Risk Mitigation Program. Now, what we can say is the Risk Mitigation Program was very badly designed by the IPP office and the Mineral Resources Department. It's a program where they try to procure emergency power over a 20-year period. And where in the world have you seen that? Mm. And where in the world have you seen that you expose a country like ours to the U.S. dollar gas price as well as an oil-based derivative like gas for a 20-year period?
Yeah.
It's absolutely a fatal flaw. And so the Mineral Resources and Energy Minister must look at his own door and stop blaming everybody else.
Yeah, but Thomas, looking at the analysis and the delays now, and Rudy says that they are making interventions to try and even relax some regulations so that it's quicker, it's easier, and we can get that capacity on the grid as soon as possible. From your assessment, when do you think we're going to start seeing that new additional capacity to the grid?
I would say earliest, and I'm talking, let's say, 100 megawatt size projects, I would say by June, July 2023. That's the earliest.
All right. Thomas Garner, Chairman of the South African Independent Power Producers Association, thanks for making time. Rudy, I'll give you the last word quickly. Thomas mentions the mixed messages that are coming from the Minister of Energy says this, and then the presidency will say something else. How are you resolving that? Because Thomas says that's what's part of frustrating the process.
Cabinet has made a decision, and Cabinet has communicated its decision regarding the support of interventions, a number of different interventions. That includes a whole list of different things, getting the REIPP bid windows, in particular bid window 5, to be finalized as quickly as possible. Cabinet has made it quite clear that the decision regarding the embedded generation, self-generation projects, which is the sub-100, has to be dealt with, and this capacity needs to get online as quickly as possible. The president in his SONA has made a number of announcements of ensuring that we bring forward many of the IRP commitments, including the gas to power 3,000 megawatt, and this is quite important. Yeah. So Cabinet has taken a decision on these things, and I think it's important that we not play politics. We need to fix the energy problem, and that's quite critical.
Right.
And we are working quite hard as the project management office in the presidency to work with different departments, to work with ESCOM, to work with industry on ensuring that we get megawatts onto the grid as quickly as possible.
All right, Rudy, Dix?
And that's the focus, Clint.
Yeah, and we're hoping that's going to be realized soon, because if you look at it, that's the only solution to the constrained power supply. It's to bring that new additional capacity to the grid as soon as possible. Rudy Dix, Head of Project Management in the Presidency.